chance of showers.
With a chance of fog, ladies and gentlemen, in the afternoon. Daryl Bradford Smith here with you today for the second hour of the French Connection. We've got actually about 54 minutes ahead of us till the next hour. Central France location, IamTheWitness.com is the website. And IamTheWitness@Hotmail.com is my email address. I don't get my emails anymore, ladies and gentlemen. They often don't get sent to me, and if I send them to you, they often don't arrive. So anyway, go right back to my guest, Ray McGovern. Ray, the second one is Dov Zollkeim, and Dov Zollkeim's also the same gentleman that was implicated in the disappearance of $2.6 trillion from the Pentagon budget that he just says, well, I don't know where it went. And then there are two others. One of them is in a lower-level State Department post and another one in the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. I don't have their names in front of me because somebody cut one of my phone lines over here, and I haven't got any Internet today, just a phone line today. No Internet anymore, ladies and gentlemen. I've been Internet-free all day. I've been going through shakes.
That's a mixed blessing, huh?
Well, it's been tough, you know.
Yeah.
But the fact is, we got a caller online. His name's Chris, and he may have a question for you. Chris, you're online with Ray McGovern.
Hi.
Hi, Chris.
I see two omens which may be precipitating World War III, and I was wondering if Mr. McGovern would comment on that. The doctrine of preemption, which was used to justify the Iraq War, was very controversial, and now it has set a precedent so that it's no longer even discussed. And it's an imperialistic doctrine that runs counter to everything American. The other thing that concerns me is that they are not this time looking for a broad-based international coalition to attack Iran, but are overtly stating that it will be primarily America and Israel. And I could see how that could easily precipitate World War III because you don't have world agreement on an action. You have unilateral action.
Yeah, well, Chris, those are the $64 questions, aren't they?
Yeah.
The doctrine of preemption is, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah. Better called preventive war rather than preemptive war. To have preemptive war, which is okay by some international standards, you've got to have an immediate threat that you're moving against. There was no immediate threat here. There wasn't even a grave and gathering threat, we learned. And so preventive war has been outlawed for centuries, and we thought that we had gotten beyond that. So what we have is a precedent for the U.S. Deciding to attack or invade invade any country that it deems a possible threat, and that is a rogue regime. Now, as far as Iran is concerned, it would be really crazy for the U.S. to take military action against Iran. Now, I say that, and the next sentence I have to say, our policy is being run by people who in this town, when I was briefing the most senior officials in our government, were universally referred to as the crazies. I'm talking about, the kinds of people like Wolfowitz and Pearl and Feith and the people that that still exist, the so-called neocons. And so it's quite possible that the neocons will bring these generals with the stars on them with blue suits and convince the president, look, you know, we have a terrific Air Force here. We've got all these weapons, smart weapons. They're really smart weapons. You know, they have 800s on the SAT scores, and, you know, they can just surgically remove all these nuclear facilities in Iran. That would be sheer idiocy. That would be really crazy. And do I rule it out? No, I do not rule it out, because those same people are running our policy. Now, who is Iran a threat to in the Middle East?
Let's go back to this one. This is a perfect lead-in, Ray.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's the same with Iraq or Iran. Even, you know, Philip Zelikow, you probably remember that name. He was the person who was actually allowed to run the 9/11 commission. But before he was doing that, he was on the president's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. In other words, privy to, you know, all the secrets and then some. And he let out at an informal seminar at the University of Virginia that it's silly to think that Iraq was before the invasion. It's silly to think that Iraq posed any strategic threat. threat to the United States. The real threat was, of course, to Israel, but that this was not a factor that was able to be discussed in polite circles. It wouldn't go over well to think that we're sending U.S. boys and girls to die for Ariel Sharon, and so we had to keep that under wraps. Now, this by Philip Zelikow, who would have every reason to avoid saying that because it happens to resemble what I believe to be part of the truth. And this goes to the nub of the equation here. Who are these neocons? Now, I was blissfully unaware of this, but after I made some comments before Congress and got really accused, a lot of the right-wing radio shows were saying, ah, McGovern is anti-Semitic. Why? Because he's really flailing against the neocons, and I am denouncing the neocons for their stupidity and their recklessness. And he knows that all these neocons are Jewish.
That's right.
And I said to myself, wow, I didn't know that. And I you know, put a list of the names. I said, well, gosh, you know, not all of them, but most of them. And, you know, it broke it up to my naivete. But what I would like to add to that is simply this, that I very seldom get viscerally upset. But I react very strongly against any charge of anti-Semitism, because anybody who knows about anti-Semitism, and we and veteran intelligence professionals for Sandy know about that because we have people from the FBI who infiltrated these hate groups and know what it's like to be in these hate groups and know what a terrible thing that is. Not only that, but I feel very guilty, as many Americans do, that my parents and others of that age sat by while ships taking Jewish refugees from Germany were turned away from our shores, unconscionable.
Because, Ray, they wanted them in Palestine, not in America.
Well,
that's
unconscionable,
why.
That they would be turned away. And,
yeah, they were because they wanted them sent to Palestine, and that's the reason we sent them back.
Well,
the Jewish leadership in America said, do not accept those ships, send them to Palestine.
Yeah.
That's
well,
why.
Yeah, but, you know, the people who throw doubt on the Holocaust, you know, that, you know, that goes beyond the pale for me. So what I'm saying is this, that you take those neocons, take the ones that were most influential. Take take Feith, for example. He lost his whole family to the Holocaust, his whole family. His father was the only one that survived, okay? Now, why am I saying that? I'm saying that because Feith, Pearl, Wolfowitz, they all openly acknowledged that their founding ethic, that their whole personhood was formed by the Holocaust. Now, that's okay. I mean, it's not okay that it's a Holocaust, but you can understand that. The question is whether people like that should be running our foreign policy toward the Middle East. It's like if someone asked me, Ray, look, we'd like you to be the analyst on British policy toward Northern Ireland. I wouldn't be able to do that. All those stories my grandmother told me about the English coming in and taking their horses and all their cattle and their crops, I couldn't possibly be objective on that. And so what I'm saying is that if you have people who have real problems deciding between what they conceive to be the strategic interests of the state of Israel and the strategic interests of the American of America, then you have a real problem, because no one should be put in that position. And indeed, that's what George W. Bush did, put a whole slew of people in that exact position.
Well, you know, and on top of that, Ray, we've got Larry Franklin, we've got the Pollard case, we've got spying after spying after spying incident. It's just amazing. Chris, hang on for one more segment, and we've got Mike coming up real soon, too. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got more to come from Ray McGovern and Christopher and myself on The French Connection. Stick with me. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right back into our interview here. We've got two people online here with me, my guest Ray McGovern and Chris from Chicago. Chris, you've got a pile of statistical and cited evidence that might help Ray clarify some of his thoughts right now, because you've been working with the facts for a long time, Chris. Chris is a researcher and has a lot of cited facts.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chris, you want to share with him some of the things that you kind of think about what he's been sharing?
Well, I think there is a religious element to all this, and I have another question that I think his expertise may help answer, if I may premise it with a few statements. I don't see that the real goal is to wipe out the nuclear program of Iran, because it obviously doesn't pose an imminent threat. I think the real goal is some kind of land warfare and occupation of Iran. And I recall in the Cold War, the chief concern was tank warfare with the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, and our solution was the neutron bomb and limited nuclear exchange in Eastern Europe. And I'm wondering if now that they're discussing the use of tactical nuclear weapons, they're going to justify it by the expense of the war, and that the United States simply can't afford to get into another Iraq, which would be even on a much more massive scale. And there's also the religious apocalyptic element of utilizing nuclear weapons in the Middle East, which fits in with the religious beliefs of Christians, Muslims, and Jews. And does he think that that's a possibility, that these nuclear weapons will be used and justified purely on an economic basis? And what do you believe will be the consequences of it?
Chris, these are really tough questions, and they're very germane to what's going on here. It's incredible for people in this at this point in history to be thinking that the kind of views that are shared by some of the president's hardcore supporters, the right-wing evangelicals who are waiting for the rapture moment, they could actually have an effect on U.S. foreign policy. But I dare say there's a danger that that is the case. Now, Bush, let me just take two steps back here. Remember when Bush was asked, well, sir, are you concerned at all about your place in history? Do you remember what he said? He said, no, he says, I'll be dead. Well, you know, aside from the kind of flippant and irresponsible attitude toward the president's place in history, you can see in that statement some sort of feeling that, you know, if we're approaching the apocalypse here, and we really are all going to be dead, and so we make hay while the sun shines, and that's an incredible factor if that's at work within the president's mind. Now, the religious element, you know, yeah, there is a religious element, and we have to face right into it. I would distinguish both the normal, the mainstream evangelicals who do not share any of this. As a matter of fact, in Christianity Today, their main publication, look for an article against torture in this issue, which is really they stepping out saying, look, there are some things beyond the pale. So I think we have to sort of distinguish between this hardcore and the mainstream evangelicals, for whom I have a great deal of respect, and similarly the mainstream Jewish community, for whom I also have a great deal of respect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're talking about the possible use of tactical nuclear weapons, that has scared me from day one. As soon as the president started saying, you know, everything's on the table, and reversed U.S. policy on first use, saying that, you know, sure, we have these things, and they're small, and, you know, they've been contained. And so that is a real danger, and that is why we have to make sure that we do everything we possibly can to alert the country to the fact that these crazies might start something like that with the ultimate expectation that they get out of it by dropping these smart tactical nuclear weapons. That would be beyond the pale, and we have to make sure that we prevent that.
I agree with you. Thanks, Chris, for your questions.
Thank you.
We've got another caller, Mike from Arizona. Mike, you're up with Ray McGovern.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Daryl and Ray. Ray, it surprises me a little bit to hear you say that you only recently had a revelation about the neocons and who they really are. So let me ask another question kind of along those lines. Do you appreciate that there's been a network at work in this country for at least going back to the days of Woodrow Wilson it's the old world money, Rothschild money and his allies in this country like Rockefeller. But you got this network of Rhodes Scholars and CFR members, some high-level Freemasons and allied organizations that have been working very feverishly, but very clandestinely to undermine the sovereignty of this country and merge us with the Soviet Union and into a world government?
Well, Mike, I appreciate your question. And these things have been underway and part of the woodwork for a very long time. You're quite right about that.
Yeah.
What I see here, the difference, is that all of a sudden when George W. Bush came into power, he ushered them into the top policymaking positions.
Yeah.
And that is unprecedented. His father, I know this firsthand, his father kept specifically Pearl, Wolfowitz, that whole crowd at middle levels of the Defense Department where they couldn't really get the United States of America into a hell of a lot of trouble, okay? He was guided in doing this by a prescient General Scowcroft and by a savvy James Baker at State. Every time they kind of reared their head and started to make trouble, they were sat on by Bush under the influence of Baker and Scowcroft. So what I'm talking about is a new phenomenon where these neocons, and you know, the name really is not all that old in my experience, and I knew who they were, and I knew they came out of this project for a new American century, and I knew that you know, the clean break memorandum going back to Netanyahu, I knew that they had worked for the Israeli government, but I just kind of assumed that, you know, maybe, you know, third or half of them were actually of Jewish extraction and you know,
but
from
my
families.
Point Ray,
but then I found out that because I was accused of equating neoconservatives with Jews, that you know, the charge was right, because unbeknownst to me, 80 or 90% of them were also Jews. So,
well, the fact is, Ray, that's why I've called them Zionists, and they're not neocons in my book. They're Zionists, and the fact is that they're Israeli Zionists, and that changes the whole fabric of this discussion once you make that juxtaposition, because it brings with it a description of these people that is much closer to the events that are being shaped in the Middle East and in our country. And I think the neocon tag kind of paints over the fact that they have these clandestine goals and have had them for generations, like I think Mike was alluding to. What do you think, Mike?
Well, my point is this, and I think it was lost somewhere in there. This is not a new phenomenon. What's new is the Jewishness of it is becoming more overt. But every Secretary of State since I was born, every Undersecretary of State, every head of the FBI, every head of the CIA, but one, has been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. These people have been at the highest levels of the government for over 50 years. And, you know, these are the real enemies of this country. They're not 10,000 miles away wearing turbans.
There you go. And, ladies and gentlemen, we're back without the guest. He's finished with his hour. So he took his leave of the program. Mike's still with us. Mike.
Yeah.
You know what, Mike? You know what? Listen, Mike. You know, I put some pressure on there because I don't like mixing terms here. I mean, the fact is we're facing the biggest calamity in the United States history right on our horizon, and we've lost our constitutional republic lock, stock, and barrel. And I don't think there's time to dilly-dally.
No, I agree.
Yeah. And I tried to get him to go as far as I could get him to go.
Yeah, and, you know, when you hear the, I think he's about the number four or number five man in the CIA, the man who gave the daily briefings to the president, admit that he didn't even know who these neocons were, what they were about, presumably until after he was out of the agency. I mean, that's kind of scary.
Well, it is. It's frightening in the fact that I could sit here and figure this out with two sawhorses and a piece of wood and a computer that gets hacked into every 5 minutes, and I could figure it out, but his whole apparatchik underneath him couldn't do it.
Yeah, and I frankly find it a little bit hard to believe, but clearly something has these guys running scared. I mean, you've got people of the stature of Morgan Woodward, a chief economist in
Morgan Reynolds, you mean?
Morgan Reynolds, I'm sorry, who was the deputy secretary of Treasury?
Yeah, that was he was labor. Morgan Reynolds was. I don't know.
Oh, Paul Craig Roberts.
Yes, Paul Craig Roberts. Okay.
These people are coming out and saying things that are unprecedented about their suspicions about government involvement in 911 and other terrorism on the horizon coming from our own government. Something has these guys running scared, and frankly, I'm concerned too that these people are ready to raise it up to the next level. I mean, we've gone from Ruby Ridge, you know, where one or two people were killed, to Waco, to World Trade Center 1, where you know a few hundred people were killed and injured, to World Trade Center 2, where
Oklahoma City was.
I left Oklahoma City out. Yeah, several hundred people killed. Compliments of the BATF and probably FBI. And the next order level, the next order of violence is, you know, you're talking tens of thousands of people or more. And you know, it's clear that they're determined to scare us to wits in order to scare the wits out of us in order to get us to surrender, you know, surrender our rights. They want to be in a position where they don't have to ask us. We're saying, please, just do whatever's necessary to make us safe from those crazy Arabs.
Well, we're going to be turning over our rights to the people who did it to us. You know that, and I know that. And in fact, radical Islam was designed by the Israeli Mossad and exported to Saudi Arabia in the form of Wahhabism, and then, of course, exported around the Arab world. And anybody who's in the Arab world listening knows darn well that the Arab world has not ever been radicalized on its own accord, and in fact, for centuries now, they've had terrible things happen to them at the hands of Zionism.
Oh, sure, and we spent over $100 million in 2001, just months before we were poised to invade Afghanistan. We were showering them, the Taliban, with millions of dollars. Presumably, you know, we were providing them. The CIA was providing them with textbooks for their madrasas, preaching hatred against the West. I mean, you know, arithmetic lessons like, you know, you have two Claymore mines and three you know, TOW missiles. How many infidels can you kill with these? You know, given these parameters, so. You
That's
know,
right. In fact, you're not joking.
No, and this was coming out of our tax dollars, and these halfwits that I see on a daily basis who appear to be educated people, they buy this garbage that it's these crazy Arabs that are the enemy, and they never look beyond the press clippings and this silliness that we get in the nightly news. To see that our own government has been out there stirring up trouble and paying millions of dollars to make us more unsafe by the day.
Well, what explains that to you, that these people you're around, well-educated, can't wrap their brain around it? Are they afraid or are they just plain stupid?
It's just a laziness. It's partially laziness, and it's partially just a phenomenon of human nature that these people take advantage of, these Kabbalists, the Talmudists. They know that people are very uncomfortable with the notion that their own government may be willing to kill them and kill them in large numbers in order to herd them around like cattle. And they know that it's much easier for people, much more pleasant for people to think that their government representatives are simply incompetent and not that they're, you know, violent criminals, which is what they are.
Well, you know, here's the thing. So what you're saying is, by and large, the American public are lazy and cowardly, and these are the people I'm risking my life for?
I'm afraid so. And,
yeah.
But you know, to
I've come to the same conclusion, and I got to tell you something, Mike. You know, every day that I do this, I say to myself, when in the hell is – I mean, I've asked how many times for people just to bring one listener to this show, and we're still dangling around the same numbers, and I don't get it. And I start wondering to myself, why am I doing this?
Well, you know, I know it sounds cliche, but you do it for the children. The children out there who haven't had a chance to grow up, they haven't had a chance to make mistakes. You know, there are so many beautiful people in this country who are so innocent and don't understand the depth of evil that is present in our own government and in all really all the big governments in the industrialized world. I don't think there's anything exceptional about ours. If anything, it's worse than.
Well, of course, it's the most. It is the most messed up government presently on the planet, aside from the Israelis, which take the cake every time.
Yeah, but if you look what happened in the Soviet Union after the Jewish takeover of 1917, what you saw was they were very clever about ways to kill the Gentiles in mass numbers. They put a great deal of thought into that. You know, how do we kill people most efficiently? But somewhere along the line, as they started to accrue more and more money, more and more power, then you started to have a lot of infighting between the various Jewish factions. And you always had this factionalism between the Sephardi and the Ashkenazi. These people, don't really care for each other and they don't trust each other. But basically you've got the same, you had the same fault lines as any other gangsters. These people, they wanted it all and they didn't trust each other, to hold the gold or anything else. So,
hang on for another segment with me, Mike. We'll bring him back after this, this break, ladies and gentlemen, another couple of points from Mike and we'll just continue on French Connection. Stick with me. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We're the last long segment here with my call-in guest here, Mike from Arizona. Mike, I got a question for you, Mike. I mean, you're down there on the border with Mexico, and you're down there in the Arizona region of near Mexico, not necessarily on the border, but close enough to know what kind of people are floating up from the south, and we looks like we're going to implode the nation. Are we, in your view, going to be putting the borders back at Mexico and locking down the place, or does it look like they're doing anything about that?
There's a lot of lip service given to that right now, obviously by the Arizona politicians and by Bush, of course, as always. We've got to do something. Obviously, we have a failed policy. Well, the policy isn't failed. It was there was never any will to do anything about it, and it wasn't so much because of the great crying need for cheap labor. My goodness, they got millions of illegals here in this country, and they've got more than enough cheap labor to build several pyramids in this state. What you've got is millions of dollars are being poured into bringing more and more of these illegals here. Georgie Ann Geyer wrote a book a few years back, I think it was called Americans No More, where she pointed out that a lot of the funding for La Raza and Mecha and some of these other, as Alex Jones calls them, Mexican KKKs, comes from grants from the U.S. government, from related agencies, from Ford Foundation, Pew Charitable Trust, and the usual suspects, so you have this bizarre situation where you got Border Patrol agents who are afraid to touch these illegals for fear of being sued by a group that's funded by the very government that pays their paychecks. It's absolutely bizarre, and very few people, unfortunately, know that. They're willing to take the cynical attitude that it's just this drive for cheap labor that's driving this this process. But it's not. It's a drive to balkanize this country, just like Quebec in Canada, just like the Basques in Spain. You name it. The Arabs in France. They're diluting out the Americanism. And, when they've already started pulling the plug on the economy here in this country, of course, but, when it becomes more and more obvious, you're going to have millions of these, illegals running around with, five, 10 children to support. And I don't care how good a people they are, and most of them are basically good human beings, but, you know, they're going to have hungry mouths to feed, and they're not going to have any jobs because the people who used to pay them to trim their bushes don't have jobs themselves.
That's right.
So you're going to have it's a great prescription for anarchy, and once you've got that anarchy brewing, then you've got it's a quick step from there to your.
Well, it's by design, and it seems like it's by design, and these guys have this all planned out. You know what? I'm one of the only radio shows in the country right now that's telling the truth, Mike. Why is that?
Well, the truth is a rare commodity, as you and I know, and it's golden. And unfortunately, there's a lot of patriots for dollars who have a lot of the essentials down, but they, you know, they're very miserly with it, and they want to make money out of it. You know, those of us who care about this country, we give it away for free.
I'm spending my own money to be on this show right now with you.
Sure, I've paid money to give presentations, hundreds of dollars, and to hire, you know, off-duty police, and, you know, I get five people show up. I don't know. How do you do it? How do you wake up the people who fundamentally don't even know there's a problem, let alone...
We've got a couple of other callers, Mike, and I appreciate your time with me on the French Connection. I've got two other people waiting, and what I'm going to do is urge you to keep calling my show and sharing your experiences, because you know what? There are only a few people out there fighting this good fight with us, and I got to tell you, I look at the numbers. It's only in the thousands, Mike, and that's painful for me to see that I've put this much effort in and tell this kind of truth and only get thousands of people involved. But that's the way it goes. Thank you, my friend. We're with Chris in Tennessee. Chris, you have a question?
Yeah, I got a couple of comments, and then I've got a question. I'll leave you with that. You guys with that. Mike hit a point there. He mentioned earlier about being around some educated, well-meaning Americans who just simply don't have a clue as to the amount and the extent of the evil that controls our government and manipulates, you know, the unsuspecting who work within that government.
That's right.
I see it every day. Well, not every day because I'm a part-time NASA guardsman here in Tennessee. But when I do go to that once-a-month drill and, you know, the exercises and what have you, it just amazes me as to the ignorance that's present there. And it's just anyway. As far as the second point was, as far as this you know, the federal government. Goes in the voting system is, you know, there I have to agree with you on the, we need a vote.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to vote until we get this thing cleaned out and get it right. But my question is, what can we do to take it back besides what we're already doing?
Well, let me address that when we come back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Chris, for the call. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a short segment, and we appreciate it for being on the French Connection. We're back. Darryl Bradford Smith, your host. Last segment here on this Tuesday edition of the French Connection, 31st day of January. I'm going to go right back to someone who called earlier. Chris, you're back on the radio. What do you got for us?
I want to get back. By the way, it's been a very good show, I think. The messianic element.
Yeah.
The Israelis, if there is a group among them who anticipate announcing a Messiah who is already alive, may consider themselves constrained by a time element, and there are a lot of factors. It would be good to know who that Messiah is so that we would know the type of time constraints that they feel they are under. For example, if the Messiah were in ill health, that would put pressure on them to accelerate events, or if the Messiah were aging, that would put pressure on them to accelerate events.
You mean the Antichrist?
That's what I'm getting to next. That's why I think Christians in America are under attack, because the Catholic Church has already been undermined, and the only two groups largely powerful enough and willful enough to respond to a Jewish announcement of a Messiah would be fundamentalist Christian Americans and the Muslim world. and both of those seem to be under strong attack.
It's by design again. Yeah.
So if we see the American Christian community being undermined, and we see Christian leadership conditioning Christians to the idea that the Jews may announce a Messiah, we should expect that events are going to be accelerated.
Well, are they doing that?
It appears that with certain television programs and other things, they are doing that. And I think Ted Pike would be far more knowledgeable than I about what's taking place in the attacks on the Christian community.
But, well, surprise, surprise, we have Ted tomorrow.
There you go. You might want to ask about the marginalization of Christian Americans, because that would be a key element, and that would accomplish two goals for them. If they can create strife between Christian Americans and Jews, they can marginalize American Christians as anti-Semites, and at the same time create an incentive to American Jews to emigrate to Israel under pressure of anti-Semitism. They could foment a battle there that would accomplish both goals that they would want. And then they could then marginalize any reaction to their announcement of a Messiah as anti-Semitism.
Well, you know, this is as sick as it gets, guys. You know what, Chris? I sometimes just want to just throw up my hands and say, what in the cripes is going on in this world? But it's there. It's got to be dealt with. We're going to do it. We're going to do it with strength. We're going to do it with courage, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I tell you something, I look around my world and I say, where is my help? You guys got to get going. I mean, I work like a dog to do this, and I need your help. This is not fun radio. This is not pleasure. This is the real fight here is on the French Connection. And you know what? I need more people to listen to this. We got to get this word out. And I need every single one of you to drag people to this radio program and explain to them these facts, show them what we've got, and let them wrap their brain around just how desperate our times are, ladies and gentlemen, because you know what? If we don't get this stuff moving right now, we are not going to win this. We're not going to take these people. So let's turn to. It's time. French Connection, tomorrow, Ted Pike. Thanks, Chris, for calling in. We got more to come on the French Connection tomorrow, so you stick with me, and we'll bring some more facts to you. Till tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. See you later.